Have you ever struggled with fear in your life? Have you ever had the thought that I am not brave? Well, I'm here today to tell you that you are. Welcome to the Brave Podcast. I'm your host, Alexis Newland, and I'm so glad that you're tuning in here today. Each week, a friend and I get together and share stories of what makes them brave. So sit back, relax, enjoy your favorite cup of coffee or tea, and get ready for some engaging conversation. And remember, no matter what your story is, you are brave. Hey guys, thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode. This is episode, I believe this is 61, which just blows my mind that there's 61 of these. And even better that I have listeners that tune in every week. Thank you guys so much. I am so appreciative of you. So this week's guest, I'm so excited to bring to you. Her name is Dr. Latarsha Holden. She went from being homeless with her six kids to having a PhD and running for council. Her story is absolutely amazing. She shares the story of in her darkest hour of how she was able to turn life around. She had two choices and just, wow, you're going to love her story. Dr. Latarsha Holden is an author, 13-time author. She's a coach and she has her PhD in leadership studies. You are going to be absolutely inspired and encouraged by her amazing story and what she has done since being homeless with six kids. It's just, I loved her story so much. And she's from Atlanta, which is where I'm from. So I was really excited to talk to another person from my hometown. All right. Without further ado, here is my guest, Dr. Latarsha Holden. Hi, you're listening to The Brave Podcast, and I'm your host, Alexis Newland. And my guest today is Dr. Latarsha Holden. So I'll have you introduce yourself and tell people why you're awesome.
Hi, okay. Everyone. I am Dr. Latarsha Holden, born and raised here in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm just so excited. My story is not only it's inspiring me because I think I'm just more in awe what God has done. So within the last 12 years, I've gone from being homeless in the streets of Atlanta with six children to running for city council in the 2017 election, from a GED to a doctorate degree in leadership studies. I'm now a 13-time published author, and I just released my first comic book 6 months ago.
That is amazing. You've done quite a bit. I have to tell you, I'm from Atlanta, too. I grew up there.
Okay, awesome. Yeah. You might be one of my children's age. You look kind of young.
Yeah. What part of Atlanta are you from?
Again, you look young, you probably don't know, but I came out of Carver Homes. Those who from Atlanta, the old Carver Homes.
I know where those are, yes.
Okay. So came out a Grady baby, but yeah. So Atlanta has been home now 48 years.
Wow. My aunt lives in East Point, Georgia.
Okay. All right, cool. We was from Carver Homes. My family resided off of Camilton Road.
Yeah, I know that street.
Yeah, for about 30, 40 years. Yeah.
Yeah, my mom had a really good friend who lived off of Campbellton Road. We would go to her house often in the summer and just relax. It was good, fond memories of being in that area.
Okay, what part of Atlanta are you from?
Marietta.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, and lived in California now, 8 years?
Oh, cool. Yeah. How's the weather out there?
It's cold. Well, probably not cold for you guys. It's 50 degrees today, so I'm cold.
I know for California, yeah, that's probably not.
All right, so let's jump into your story. So you said you were homeless on the streets. What led you there?
I'm leaving an abusive marriage after 10 years. By the time that ended, I didn't even know who I was. I mean, the verbal, the mental, the emotional, I was just gone. So by the time that ended, I was 35 years old. So here I was, 35, with a GED, six children, very little work history, and homeless. And we was homeless close to 4 years.
Wow. That is amazing, especially to have that many children and be homeless.
Yeah.
How did your kids cope with that? How did you cope with that?
It was hard. I mean, you know, I think the hard part about that journey was the mental shift that had to take place. For me, I had dropped out in 10th grade and had four kids by 22. So I was already a young lady that was not disciplined, not organized, didn't really have any aspirations. And so to be 35 and I'm faced now with either I have to fight or I have to run. And honestly, I wanted to go run and hide somewhere. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what freedom, liberation looked like. being an African-American woman in the big city of Atlanta, and you're homeless. But I knew I had to do something to change the trajectory of the direction that my family was going in. So when we was living in a boarded-up house at Squatter, I enrolled in college.
Wow. So how did that go? Like, you just decided, I got to make a change.
I did. You know what? I made a vow first to myself that the streets was not going to raise my six children, nor the jails was going to house them. And again, I didn't really know. I just knew I had to do something. I had 12 eyes watching me. At that time, I had two kids in high school, two kids in middle school, and two kids in elementary. So for me, not only am I surviving for myself, I got to keep my older kids from the gangs, the drugs, the street life. So it was the mental shift, the mental strain was almost unbearable. You know, even as a minister, I often pose the question, what happens when your struggle outlasts your strength? You know, we all can go through something if it's a couple of weeks, a couple of months. But when it become years, it was the hardest thing I ever had to do. Nothing was planned. I didn't start off saying, well, I'm going to do this and go to school and get a doctor, an MBA, and I'm going to run for office. The more I just kept following who I believe God made me to be, it's like the more that my compassion for others became my guiding light. But one thing I did to save my six children from the gangs and streets, I just gave my six children the only thing I possessed, the older four. The younger two was like 6 and 5. But I still showed them, and it was so humiliating to me because this is the only thing I had. You know, they still teenagers. They wanted the clothes and shoes. I didn't have the money to give that. So the only thing I had to offer them was to love them unconditionally and to show them how to serve at our Lord's. Now, let's say they was like, Mom, what are you talking about? How can we give back or help anybody when we're in our situation? I said, well, I believe if I can teach you all how to give back at our Lord's, I've given you a strong foundation to build on to become great leaders. Alexis, to my surprise, although they grumbled and complained, and I got the newspaper clips, and we did about 4 or 5 events in the community, they turned around. My oldest son in his senior high school, he's 31 now, be 32 this year. He came to me and said, Mother, my way of giving back by what you showed me is going is serving in the United States military. He retired, medically retired now, 10 and a half years after serving in the Marines. He's now second year college student. My other son became a caretaker, gainfully employed. I got a daughter saying my way of giving back is going to the medical field. She's an EMT, licensed pharmacy tech, and she's in her second year of college. Another daughter said, Mom, by what you showed me, my way of giving back is going to the human service field. She graduated last year with her bachelor's in, I think, liberal studies or human service. She's joined the United States Army 3 years ago. My 19-year-old daughter now is a 4-time published author, entrepreneur, youth speaker, and spoken word advocate. And my youngest,
19?
At 19, she became a 2-time published author by the time she was 16.
Wow.
And she started speaking out. I started to take her with me when I was a community advocate. I used to speak out on the violence in the community. So she started speaking out by the time she was 12. And my youngest son, Omega, that's the last of lessons. He's a senior in high school at North Atlanta.
Yeah.
And there's no more coming out the Omega. Omega's a youth leader. I mean, I'm just the only key that I had to give them. They took it and ran with it.
In an amazing way. I can't imagine being homeless, all 7 of you guys together.
Yes.
Nowhere to really call your home. And then also fleeing something that was dangerous, having such a great outcome and having kids who are just amazing contributors to society, passing on what you said by giving back and serving others.
Yeah. My 9-year-old grandson became a published author right before Christmas.
Wow.
So now my children's children are being affected by, you know, the legacy I'm leaving. My grandson, he comes over and say, Grandma, he see the awards, the magazine features. So just to be able to inspire them is I tell you, I don't even have words to explain that.
That is, wow. We're just starting off with such an amazing story. So I want to go back a little bit. So before coming homeless, you said you were in an abusive situation. Mm-hmm. How long were you in that situation? How did you guys meet? And what made you decide to leave?
Well, we met early in our 20s. I think I was like 24. He was 21. Now, he was in the beginning, he was an awesome guy. This is what blew my mind. I think just really messed me up. When I met him, he was an electrician by trade.
Okay.
But the guy was so talented. He started a self-contracting business and I was his secretary. But he didn't have the business mind to keep it going. So whenever I would tell him or suggest things he should do to grow the business, he did the opposite and his business ended up failing.
Okay.
He came to me and asked, hey, won't you start a business as a woman contractor? I'll be your electrician. Since you try to give me some advice, let's see what you do. He said, if you fail, you fail. If you succeed, you succeed. It's all up to you. Well, nobody ever told me that I can do anything besides go get a fast food restaurant job. And because I had four kids at this time, by the time I was 22.
Okay.
And I started that business. Oh my gosh. Running a business came easy for me. I guess that's why I have an MBA, but running a business came easy for me, but the jealousy started.
Hmm.
He came to me because he started acting funny. He started stepping to my jobs and I couldn't understand it. I said, I don't understand. Why would you tell me to start something? And you're going to be mad at me. You're going to stop loving me. He said, I never thought you was going to do as well. It was really a joke.
Wow.
That's when the abuse started. Once he came to me with this proposition, he said, look, if you really want the marriage to work, give up the business. I was used to being rejected for doing bad, dropping out of high school, 10th grade, having kids by the time, four kids by the time I was 22. But I wasn't used to being rejected for doing well. So for me, I just had two kids with him. So now I have six kids. I didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
I wanted my marriage. So I gave up my business hoping it would save the marriage. But by the time I did all that, he knew that he had emotionally and verbally beat me down. So by the time that came to an end, he hightailed it and I didn't know what to do. I was so scared to try anything. I didn't know which way to turn. And so that's what led us into homelessness.
Wow. He really kind of chipped away at your confidence and your...
Yeah. Yourself. Right. When my wings was beginning to fly or emerge as a butterfly, it got clipped before they could even really take off. I was in business for about 5 years and my business was a very successful business. I mean, we had contracts with major companies like Earthlink when it was the internet service.
Yeah.
I did a ground up project with some Washington Laws and Everdell Estates. And I was one of the main electrical contractors, my company for Habitat for Humanity. But my ex-husband, he said he just could not take that I was becoming successful in the field that I guess he thought was his.
Yeah. And it's just amazing. I'm listening to your story. You said you graduated with just the GED. You have no training and yet you have this flourishing business. It sounds like God really gifted you with the ability to create and succeed in business.
Yeah. And I say, who would have thought I would have a master's in business? And so I guess, like you said, that was something that was gifted to me.
Wow. And so you go to college. So when you first sign up for college, what made you choose what you wanted to get your schooling in? Did you just kind of go and like have an open mind or were you focused on like what you wanted to do?
Well, I started having visions and dreams of me preaching around the world and speaking on stages, but I didn't know where to go. So to be honest with you, college really wasn't my first choice. I remember going to a Sunday service at St. Peter Missionary Baptist Church here off of Venetian Avenue. And when the female pastor came down after church was over, I went to her to tell about my dreams and visions. And honestly, I thought the lady was going to tell me and God was going to make it better, go join that ministry class and, you know, and God was going to work it out. She did not say that.
Okay.
She ministered to me a little bit, but then she said, did you finish school? I'm going to be honest. I was hot as fish grease. I don't want to even talk at school. At this point, I'm 35 years old. And last time I've been in any one school, I was 15. I kind of dropped my head. And I said, no, ma'am, I didn't finish school. She said, you probably want to start there. When I went home, and at that time, home was a board up house at Squatters. When I went there that night, I paced the floor and I knew that no one was coming to save us. So that was the thing that prompted me to go to school. I enrolled in Beulah Heights. It was Bible College back then.
Okay.
So I enrolled in Beulah Heights Bible College to get my associate degree in biblical education. And I just matriculated. I got my BA in biblical education, my AA in biblical education, my BA in leadership studies, my MBA, and then I went on to the PhD program for leadership studies.
I'm just blown away. I couldn't imagine hearing that and then going home to, like you said, a squatter's house and like, okay, I'm going to go to college. And I love that you're driving initiative to go and decide, I'm going to make my life better. I'm going to start something good.
But you know what? It was hard. It got so hard. I remember walking to a hospital here in Riverdale, Georgia. And I mean, it was humiliating. You know, people look at you like you're nobody when you're homeless. So we lived in the squatters, scraping the money for hotels and shelters, living in a car. So for me, I'm just like, oh, my gosh, I'm such an embarrassment to my kids, to myself. So I remember walking to a hospital here in Riverdale, Georgia. I wasn't raised in a church. But when I walked into the hospital, I told the lady, I said, ma'am, I don't think I can live. I can do this anymore. I don't want to live. She said, ma'am, are you saying you want to commit suicide? I said, yes, ma'am, I can't do this. I'm tired. I cannot do this. They kept me for a week for observation. Alexis, on that floor, they had a padded room. And I asked the lady, I said, ma'am, can I go into that room? She said, ma'am, you're no threat to anybody. I said, I know, I need to go in there. She allowed me to go into that room once a day. And it was there I remember dropping down to my knees, crying out to God, God, are you there? Please help me. I don't have anything. I'm scared. I'm lost. Now, when they released me after that week of observation, although things did not immediately change, I knew something was different. And that's when I just, you know, kept going through school and finished. But when I came out of school, I made a vow to God. Before I graduate, I said, God, if you deliver us out of homelessness and hopelessness, I'll go back and fight for others. And that's how I ran for city council in the 2017 election.
Wow. So how long were you homeless before you guys got back on your feet and you found housing?
We was homeless 2 years before I enrolled in college and 2 years during my undergrad. And then family housing came available, let me see, my sophomore year, but the end of my sophomore year when I was graduating with my bachelor's. And so about 4 years in all, 2 years before and 2 years undergrad.
Wow, what a story. And so you said you have a relationship with the Lord. What started you to want to start sharing your story and encouraging people to follow God?
Oh my, you know what? Because I'm, there was nothing that I did. This is the thing. I didn't have no connections.
Okay.
I'm born and raised here in Atlanta. So my family is here and it was a joke. No one would help us. I've never been on drugs. I've never been a street person. I've never had any reason for someone not to give us help, but no one would help. I remember calling the auntie one time and asking, can I just sleep on the floor? She said, no. My sister had won a major lawsuit. And I asked her, could she just give me a hotel room for one night? She said, no. But I remember driving around the city of Atlanta and the kids in the background, they're tired and I'm crying because I'm like, I don't know what to go. I don't know what to do. I'm freaking out. We was all tired. And I heard a still small boy say, go to Berean Christian Bookstore. Your help is there. And at first, I'm questioning this. Well, I'm like, what are you talking about? The voice repeated itself. Go to Berean Christian Bookstore on Cleveland Avenue. Your help is there. Alexis, when I went there, I walked in. I was drawn to this lady that was standing reading a book. I went to her and I shared what was going on. She said, hold on. She went to talk to her husband. She came back and said, ma'am, do you have a car? I said, yes, ma'am. She said, follow us. For one night, these people treat us like we was out of town guests. I mean, she threw a feast. She cooked. She even went to the store, got some couple things for the two younger kids. And that next day, she gave me $60 and she prayed for me. Right today, I can't even tell you what they look like. I don't even know if they was angels.
Wow.
I don't even,
so
yeah.
Beautiful. I love how God provides, especially when you think no one is there. God will just use anybody. I know for me, when I see people who are on the street who are homeless, that's a big part of my heart. I actually have a similar story. Growing up, we were homeless quite often. We were living in hotels and living in families' houses. And so listening to your story, I'm like, I know how it feels like to be that kid who's like, I just want a home. My mom did her best.
Yeah.
And my mom would meet the most amazing people just who would just come out of nowhere. She'd pray. She was a praying woman like you, and people would come and they would just provide for her a lot. And so now when I see homeless people, I just think of
my mom and people like yourself and your kids. I'm that angel for someone. I'm that person that God has wants to use to provide for them.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. And you just said that. I think that's why, even with my writings, and that's the reason why I ran for city council. I wasn't from the affluence or affluence group. I wasn't in the connected, but I knew that I had a moral duty. I remember Nelson Mandela said, how could he enjoy the limited freedom that he had when his sisters and brothers was not free? Yeah. So for me, I knew God did not bring me that far just for me. And so although I didn't win the race, it was a win for my family, my grandchildren. They was out there with their signs. We had the pictures. I mean, just memories. But I knew I had a moral duty to at least go back and try to fight for the homeless community, affordable housing.
Yeah.
And so after that's when I start writing. Now I wanted to reach the families in a holistic way. And so I wrote my life story. It just came out. I'm going to show you the book. And I wrote, I wrote my life story. Okay. I wrote 4 children's books to reach the little kids in elementary because I wanted to teach them about love and kindness and friendship. And then I wrote a book for ministers, a 60-page training manual where I go back and do workshops. And I just released my leadership book, my first leadership book for aspiring leaders in ministry and in the marketplace. So my way is just now I'm reaching, finding ways that I can be that hope and inspiration for someone else.
Yeah. And you definitely have been. Like, what a story to go and turn around something that was very hard and to now serve others in this way and to be such a light for people. So I noticed it says behind you, you're a coach now. What got you into coaching?
Well, Phoenix Rising, I started that last year. So I'm an inspirational speaker, now international. Right before the year ended, God allowed me to be an international speaker when I was invited to speak to college students in India via Zoom, but it still less, it was internationally.
Yeah.
And so I'm an inspirational speaker, empowerment coach, and I facilitate workshops. And I just know it's a difference when someone is speaking to, they have actually walked the walk.
Yeah.
Not just because I'm coming from corporate America and I got these. No, I've actually been there and I just know what it feels like when everyone looks the other way. So when I'm doing my coaching and trainings, I'm coming from a place of empathy and compassion for others. And so I'm just using my gifts to try to at least make a difference. If in one person's life, I believe I've done my job.
All right. What was it like to speak to those guys in India? That has got to be so fun.
It was, oh my goodness. I realized that the students, it was about 60 students, college students in India. And I was telling my story and I was speaking about the leadership principles that I had to implement in order to keep my morals, my values, even in the face of adversity. But their love for learning, I mean, they took notes. They came back on Facebook, wrote down 10, 12 bullet points. And the love I received from them was amazing. Only God can take a former homeless woman to where now she's reaching people nationally, internationally. 2020, I became Georgia Mother of the Year. And God did something just a little bit more for me. Not only was I Georgia Mother of the Year chosen by American Mothers, Inc., they also chose me to be National Mother of the Year for 2020, which made me the 85th woman to ever hold that title. And I made United States history.
Wow. Okay, so you got to tell me, what is Mother of the Year? I'm not familiar with that.
Well, American Mothers, Inc. is a national organization started back 85 years ago during Eisenhower time, the women of that era. They wanted to highlight mothers in each state who are doing extraordinary things. And so nominations come in around the world. And out of all the nominations, they would choose one person to represent their individual state. And out of the 50 women that they chose, they would choose only one of us to go on to be National Mother of the Year for that year. And I was chosen for that.
That is amazing. Wow. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Wow. And so you said you were a writer. What got you to start writing your first book?
Oh, you know, it's funny when you look back now, I could have never imagined this. Well, when I was younger, my family did thought I was going to be a poet, write a book of poetry when I was younger. I think that's my way of reaching people I probably never would meet. That's my way of spreading love and extending love all throughout my writings. I'm writing with a sense of love and kindness And I, as I write, you know, even if my life story, if I cry on certain things, it's still with the love and kindness I'm reaching out to. And my story is not only inspiring women. I've also had men email me or contact me via messenger and say, Dr. Holden, you're the reason why I just went back to school. You're the reason why I just started back my job search. You know, I think it's not a female story. I think it's a human story of that shows persistence and dedication and perseverance.
It definitely is. How long did it take you to get to where you are now after being 35, deciding to go back to college? How long did that journey take?
Well, everything that took place within 10 to 11 years.
Wow, it's actually pretty fast when you think about it.
Yeah. So, but then it's been, I'm 48 now. So when I started the journey, I was 35. It's been 13 years since the totality of the journey. But within 10 of those years, that's when I went from being homeless to city council, GED to the doctorate, and became, at that time, I was a 12-time published author. So within 10 years, it was a lot of, you know, I was in the mood. I think the more I just started to trust God, the more I just started to do who I believe God called me. That was a person to spread inspiration and hope. And the books just flowed and the creativity was there. And so that's why I came up with the comic book when we were on lockdown in April of last year. I wanted a creative way to send a positive message to people, individuals who are going through their personal struggles, to remind them that they're not alone and God is still there.
Yeah, he is. And it has been such an interesting time with just the lockdown and the political unrest and just the division. And it's like our country is in so need of God right now.
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Have you found people from other faiths to be more receptive to your story?
That I don't know. They haven't came out and said other religions. I think my story is one that has trans through other races. Like, for instance, last 2019, I wrote a message letting people know that I'm going to be an inspirational speaker. Told them this is a short summary. I went for this and that. I had a picture of my degrees. And within 3 months, I had over 500,000 views on LinkedIn, which is, wow, for me, I would have never thought on LinkedIn it would have did that. But I remember one lady, people from all around the world, different races, you know, sexes, economic backgrounds. But this one lady, I will never forget, she was from, I think she was up north. She was a Caucasian lady. She said, Dr. Holden, I just read your post. She said, I have my PhD. I have a loving husband. I have two loving, beautiful kids. She said, but my husband and I lost our jobs a few months ago, and we had a pretty large income coming in. She said, so we've been living off of that, but we won't be able to continue to do that for long. She said, so I started to get nervous. She said, but when I read your post, I immediately thought, what if I didn't have a supportive husband? What if I didn't have my degrees? What if I had four more kids and I was homeless? She said, your story just changed my perspective and I will always remember you for the rest of my life.
Wow.
So for me, I know in normal circumstances, she probably never paid me no attention. I mean, coming from an African-American woman here, coming from the projects to someone who had degrees and got income, but God used my story to change her perspective about what she was going through.
Wow, that is amazing. Have you talked to her since?
No, she just inboxed me on LinkedIn when I posted it, and it just went, I call it semi-viral. I mean, I just never would have thought on LinkedIn and a still picture would have went, you know, over 500,000 views. But yeah, I just would never forget what she said. Something about what she wrote me out of everyone else just stood out to me.
Yeah. Do you ever get anxious about sharing your story?
No, you know what? It's my way to spread God's love. There was no way I could have did that without him. Mm-hmm. I didn't have any connections. I didn't have any money. I wasn't that smart to go through from being, you know, with a GED to a doctorate. I knew the only way I was able to get through that was God. I didn't have it. I didn't have the resource. I started out in an abandoned house with kids. And so when I think about how he kept my mind, some days I just sit and cry and just start praising him. because I know had he not stepped in, I had no support system. I had nobody. The only people came to my aid during that time, that shelter, you know, they had a bed, a room over me and my kids. And that family, that lady who I met at that bookstore, but for 4 years, no one was helping. No one. And that's what drew me about, you know, to the hospital, because it was getting hard. Now, looking back, I remember asking God, why you didn't allow nobody to help us? He said, I don't want no one to say because of her, because of us, she's where she's at. And it strengthened me. Now I'm seeing the strength because I totally rely on him, you know.
Yeah.
Because I know for a shadow of a doubt, no one was. I was 12 years ago. I was just known as the welfare woman. The only people knew me was the welfare office. Only God can take you from being homeless to National Mother of the Year to a doc. Only God can do that.
Yeah.
I'm not crazy. Only he can do that. I tell people, though, God did not magically change my life. I had to be a willing participant in my own deliverance.
Yeah.
I still, you know, I could have wished and self-affirmation myself to death, but I still had to get up and move by faith.
That's sometimes a hard thing to do, because people kind of like, yeah, well, God, why don't you just provide? But God can provide. You have to take a step towards what he's providing for you.
Exactly.
You got to work for it. Yeah.
You got to work for it. And it's, and for me, I think, oh my gosh, the more sometimes I just sit there, no one, he was there, but family members, people laughing at me, and you know, my kids feel embarrassed because the cousins might say something mean to them, and I'm still chucking along. I'm still going, sometimes even with tears in my eyes. I didn't even see how this thing was going to end. I had, you know, when I started out 12, 13 years ago, there was no way I could have imagined my wildest dream. If you keep going, you'll be a 13-time published author. You'll be on rant for a political office, creator, comment. There's no way I could have planned that. Mm-hmm. Only God was there to see me through all of it and help me bring out who he created me to be.
So what are some of the other books that you've written?
Well, my four children, excuse me. Oh, my throat.
No problem.
I get my own water here. Sorry.
That's okay.
What I did think about. When I think about all he's done, sometimes I get choked up. So like I said, my life story, a leadership book, four children's book, a four-part youth series that deals with sex trafficking, youth, teen dating violence, bullying, love and forgiveness. I was really trying to, the love and leadership stuff I taught my six children, I used my writings to reach out to kids who probably don't have that at home.
Yeah.
If there was to read one of my books, you know, I wanted to, I remember Beyonce has a song out called I Was Here. And basically the song is, when she departs, the world was going to know she was here. And so for me, well, one thing I learned about being on this journey, chase purpose, not perfection.
Oh, I like that.
You know, so when I start writing my books, I wasn't thinking, oh, this got to be a number one bestseller. Oh, it got to be. I was writing for purpose. I was writing to spread love and to empower, to educate, to bring awareness. And so as long as I was chasing purpose, I didn't have to worry about trying to be perfect.
Okay. When did you know that you had found your purpose?
When I ran for city council and I knew that I was willing to put myself on the, I call it the chopping block, because it's a dangerous, it's a nasty game, politics.
Oh my gosh, I give you props.
Yeah, it's a nasty game, you know. But at that point when I knew that I was willing to put myself out there for others, because the compassion I have for others, my empathy, when I drove down the street and I saw my sisters pushing that stroller with that same look I had on my face, and when I see the brothers walking and they have that look of hopelessness, I just knew, I don't know, maybe as a mother, I just knew I had to do something. When I saw my sisters, you know, women my age, looking depressed and weary, I just knew. And at that point, I just knew. I just love humanitarian work. So everything I do, even if it's small, I teach my children. You can do, it don't take a lot of money to serve. Just do it with your heart. And so I'm big on servant leadership.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful thing. My sister who lives in Atlanta now, she's getting really into it. And she was just like, she made a statement on Instagram. She's like, we can't rely on the government to do the good things. It has to be us. It has to be the people who go and step out there and who are like God's hands and feet. It has to be us. So she was like imploring people to like, even if you don't have anything, you have yourself, you have your time. Like you can get out there, you can help and you can serve. And it's just so much beauty in serving others. I mean, it's what Jesus did. Yeah.
When I'm volunteering, I'm out there doing, if it's advocating, volunteering, when I'm out there with the people and I get to talk and show them the love of Jesus, to me that, because I've learned, one thing I learned when we was homeless and I used to sightsee and watch people and just watch my surroundings, I realized that I never saw a U-Haul following a funeral procession line. I'm like, it's okay to have nice things, but I want my life to mean more. You know, I wanted to be known for someone that tried, that every time she met someone, I greeted them with a smile with warmth and compassion. And so for me, my love for people is I knew that that's my word. I can volunteer. And you know, if, you know, the question they ask you, if you had money and you can do whatever you want, I would definitely be a humanitarian at large. I mean, I just love service.
And so, what are your goals for you for the rest of the year?
Hopefully with COVID, you know, hopefully COVID will end up lifting up after the new administration get in and do what they need to do. My thing is to get out, do more speaking engagements, facilitate workshops so I can help. My goal now is to empower others to change the narrative for their lives, to let them know that they have the same power that I had to rewrite their story. And so that's my goal, to, as an inspirational speaker, get more paid speaking gigs, facilitate workshops, grow my coaching business. And then last year, all my kids are now 18 and over. So this is kind of a new year where now I kind of get to fall back in love with me. Yeah. Oh.
Okay. And then my final question for you is, I'm so sorry. Hold on one second. I think I got a package or something. Ugh.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah. Glory be to God. Glory be to God. Thank you, Jesus.
I'm sorry, that was Amazon. Oh my gosh.
We're all familiar with Amazon. Yes.
Oh my gosh.
They are our best friends.
Seriously, during all this COVID stuff, like, very thankful for them. But I don't know how, I'm in California and COVID here, it's very different, our how they're kind of treating it. Like, everything's kind of locked down and you can only go to like grocery stores and Walmart, but like small stores, small shops, all that. Oh, churches have to fight to be open. It's real bad right now here.
Okay.
Yeah. Yikes. Okay. Sorry about that. Okay. All right. So my question for you is, when did you decide that you were brave?
The moment I stopped caring about what my family thought of me, the moment I just kept going, whether they were supporting me. Even when I ran for city council, no one supported me. Because at that, you know, and I have probably over 100, and I probably will have won the election had I had a little bit more support. It was my kids and about 6-7 close friends. But for the district that I ran, I need more visibility. It's the biggest district in Atlanta. Matter of fact, it's the district that our mayor Keisha Bottoms vacated to run for mayor.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, so it's District 11, the Camilton Road, the Prince, you know, just Cascade. Yeah, and
that's a big area.
That's a big area. So I needed more visibility and I just didn't have it. It was 8 of us and I was the only one in the race that was not connected. I was the only one that was actually, I would say, from rock bottom. Everybody else had, you know, they had their careers, they had been in some kind of form of interconnectedness and had the friends. And but it was that point when I just realized I didn't care what nobody thought of me. I knew that God saved me from a life of hopelessness, despair for a reason.
Yeah.
When I just didn't care, I said, shoot, people going to talk about you when you're doing good, doing bad. Once that's I realized true. That, I just kept going. And that built my confidence over time.
Wow. What was it like? I'm kind of jumping back. What was it like to run for council?
Oh, my goodness. Busy. Busy, busy. I tell you, if you ever do run for political office.
Oh,
my God. My heart go off to, I was thinking about all the doors, Senator-elect Raphael Warnock had knocked and John Austin. It's busy. When anytime you run for a public office, you definitely have to have the time. For me, going to the different forums, standing up against the other candidates, it was nice. And you know what? That district needed 40,000 to 50,000. Well, no. In that district, you need at least $20,000 to $50,000 to really make a big impact. I only had $2,000.
Okay.
But when I went to the forums, I was more relatable to the people who was there than the other candidates. So had I had a little bit more help from my family, even the lady that that won the district, she had to work. She had 50, she had raised $50,000. She knew the people. She was well connected. And she only beat me to the runoff by 400 some votes.
Wow.
Yes. So and a lot of people said, Dr. Holden, if you just had a little bit more support, you probably would have won that district.
Wow. Are you going to go for it again?
That I don't know. I don't know. It's a dirty game. But whatever, you know, God put in my spirit to run, I will. But now I just want to go out and just be more hands-on with the people in the community.
That's a beautiful thing. So how can people find you if they want to find your books, find more about you, get in touch with you for coaching? How can they locate you?
Well, first, I'm on all social media platforms. My major ones are Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You can also go to my website. All of my books are there. If you order from my website, you get autographed copies. So all of my books and even my comic book, that's www.drlatarshaholden.info, I-N-F-O. Or if you want to email me to book a coaching session, it's latarshaholden@yahoo.com. If you want to call in and my assistant would definitely set up something, you can call at 404-838-9587.
Thank you so much, Latarsha. And then any final encouragement you want to give to someone who has possibly been in your place, who's in your place now, who might be listening to this podcast?
Well, I just want to encourage you to keep going. One thing I noticed on my journey, the people who did the most talking, so whoever is in your ear saying you ain't going to be able to make it, or, girl, or brother, you know, all this is stacked up against you. The people who do the most talking ain't doing nothing. I've never saw someone that was achieving goals talking down to you, you know. Mm. So if you're going through and you're like, God, I'm trying, I'm pushing, nothing is happening, I can guarantee you, if God can take a homeless woman that had no work experience with a GED and within 10 years transform not only my life but my 6 children, God can do it for you. And you have the power within you to rewrite your story. Keep going. Don't let these naysayers, these people doing a lot of talking, talk you out of your purpose.
I love that. Thank you so much, Dr. Holden. This has been wonderful.
Thank you for having me.
Guys, her story was amazing, right? Oh, I loved her story so much. What I love most and what stood out most to me is that she said, if God can take a homeless woman that had no work experience with a GED and was 10 years, transform her life, the life of her 6 children, just an amazing testimony of the power of God and what he can do with our situation. Nothing is impossible for him. So just loved her story. I hope you loved it too. All right. My 3 asks. My first ask, of course, is to subscribe. If you are loving the show and you want to get episodes early, you can subscribe at www.braveoneministries.com. Put your info in the contact us box and then I will get a hold of you. You'll be on the email list and you'll get the episodes a day early. You can also subscribe on iTunes, follow me on Spotify. I'm on Amazon Music. I'm everywhere that episodes are streaming for podcasts. Ratings. If you guys are loving what you're hearing, definitely ratings helps me know what I'm doing well, what I need to work on, and I do read and cherish your ratings. I am so appreciative of all the comments you send. and of messages you send me via email. Thank you so much for them. So appreciative. And then finally, share. If you hear something in today's episode that you feel that would encourage another person, go ahead and click that share button and share it with your friend. Thank you so much for tuning in. Next week, we have Sandy Phillips Kirkham. Her story is amazing. It's also another one that if you have issues listening to any sort of abuse, you might want to either listen to this with earplugs in for your kiddos or skip this one if it triggers you. So next week is Sandy Phillips Kirkham. She went through extensive abuse being in her youth group, but has now turned that into a ministry to kind of help others who have experienced that as well and to educate future ministers on how to treat people properly. Thank you guys so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next week. Thanks. Bye.